from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. For more than four decades, award-winning filmmaker Frederick Wiseman has been producing verite-style documentaries that offer an in-depth, unvarnished look at American institutions. Previous films have examined a mental hospital, a police precinct, and the fashion industry, and his latest, At Berkeley, is a four-hour exploration of public higher education set on the UC Berkeley campus. Wiseman and former UC Berkeley Chancellor Robert Bourgeoneau join us to talk about the film. That's up next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Frederick Wiseman is known widely as the godfather of documentary filmmaking, and he has made some 40 documentaries since 1967. And in 2010, with the consent of then UC Berkeley Chancellor Robert Bourgeoneau, he shot 250 hours of footage over 12 weeks at UC Berkeley, which resulted in a four-hour documentary about the university titled At Berkeley. Both Frederick Wiseman and former Chancellor Bourgeoneau join us in studio for this Forum Hour. We've got to get used to calling him Professor Bourgeoneau. Welcome to both of you. Fred Wiseman, good to see you again.
Nice to be here.
Great to be here.
Robert Bourgeoneau, glad to have you both. In fact, Professor Bourgeoneau, let me begin with you. I mean, this is really pretty risky. This guy's made some films which have not exactly been flattering to many institutions, and there are probably a lot of colleges that would have just said absolutely no. You knew you were taking a risk, weren't you?
We did. Actually, I think not just a lot of colleges that would have said no. I think probably Berkeley is the only place that lives sufficiently at the edge that we actually were willing to agree to it. And because I lived in Massachusetts for a good part of my life, I knew about Fred's work and Titicut Follies, et cetera. On the other hand, he's a great filmmaker, and I thought, you know, this was going to be a unique opportunity, which indeed turned out to be the case.
Well, it also, Fred Wiseman, highlights, I think, I see it as kind of a valentine. I mean, you don't pull a lot of punches, but you do represent how important public education is, particularly a university education and a premier university education institution like UC Berkeley.
Right. Well, it's not a question of pulling any punches. The movie is a report on what I find. And Berkeley is a great university. The administration and the students and the faculty are very strong, and the administration cared about trying to resolve the severe economic issues that existed.
And they were, you let them right in the meetings, didn't you, Robert Bourgeoneau, sitting in those meetings arguing about money and tenure and things of that sort?
We did. I mean, I felt that, you know, first of all, that if we were going to tell a story, we might as well make sure that we told the whole story, and that we're a very open administration. We're, you know, we don't pretend that we did everything perfectly, but we're very proud of how we handled what turned out arguably to be the most difficult period in the history of the University of California. And Fred's timing just turned out to be he came, you know, just exactly in the middle of it. So it turned out to be, in a way, fortuitous that the autumn of 2010 was a critical period for the university.
It was also a time when the Occupy movement was on the march, and there was an occupation of the library at Berkeley and all kinds of demands, but particularly for tuition-free for college students. So it was fortuitous, Fred Wiseman, but in trying to get the whole sense of the university academically, its research, classroom teaching, the students, I mean, you even have the one guy who mows the lawn and the leaf blowers and the maintenance people. I mean, you know, 4 hours almost seems like not enough time.
Well, I mean, I barely was able to suggest the complexity of the university in 4 hours. I doubt many people would sit still for a 20-hour movie.
Why Berkeley?
Well, I've been doing a series on institutions, and I wanted to do a university, and I wanted to do a public university. Berkeley is the great public university of the world. So it was approached the chancellor and asked. And much to my surprise, he said okay.
He said okay, but you were a little bit guarded, Robert Bourgeoneau. I mean, you did want a little bit of censoring if it came down to it. And I think there were a couple of politicians who were mentioned that you needed.
So you heard the story. Yes. So, for better or for worse, I tend to say what I think. And Fred and his crew are geniuses, so they sort of meld into the background, and you very quickly forget that they were there. So, you know, so he got to film it raw. And, of course, during that time period, we were not necessarily uniformly happy with every single person in Sacramento. And so in the first meeting he came to, I made an unfortunate comment about a particular politician in Sacramento. And
Now that you're not chancellor, can you tell us who that
no,
was?
No, no. And my assistant turned purple. And when I saw the expression on her face, I thought, oh. So then we ended up making an agreement with Fred, for my sake and for that of others, that you'd have 48 hours in which you could have a particular sentence or scene deleted. And we didn't have to exercise that very often. And so, you know, the film really shows how the university really runs.
Well, this is a good time maybe to hear a cut. This is a scene from early in the film in one of the university's classrooms. The course is focusing on this is actually an administration cut. An unnamed administrator, well, they're all unnamed because we don't see who they are, is followed by then Chancellor Bergineau, and they're talking about the financial challenges facing the university.
I just want to make the point that the rapid disinvestment, 50%, inflation-adjusted disinvestment in a decade from the state of California in our educational mission, it is a real threat to our comprehensive excellence, which is the core of what makes us great. We have to understand it's not a trivial threat, it's a real threat. And that's what has, I think, got so many of us focused on what we need to do.
And I would just add to that, and this team here is critical of that, as the public investment decreases progressively, as we continue to face financial challenges, I predict that probably more future administrations will face more and more challenges to compromise on our public character.
Fred Wiseman, you're in there with the camera. You personally, in fact, are in there with the camera, kind of blending into the wallpaper. I mean, but you get the sense that they're really talking from an authentic place as opposed to being self-conscious about the fact that the camera's there.
Right. No. Well, the crew is three of us. I direct and do the sound, and I work with a cameraman and an assistant. The idea is just to sort of blend into the woodwork and not be intrusive, not ask anybody to do anything, and just have the opportunity to record what's going on and figure out what it means in the editing.
When you edit, and this is about, I think I heard some fractions like what. I mean, the fraction of what you edited out.
Well, I accumulated 250 hours of footage. The film is 4 hours, so I used 1/60th of the material.
That's the fraction I was looking for. This gets to be, in some people's minds, like maybe going to an old Eugene O'Neill play or something like that. I mean, for short attention spans, this is 4 hours is a lot to, well, give up.
Well, but I you know, at the risk of sounding arrogant, I don't think about the audience. Because I don't know how to think about the audience. I make the film to meet my own standards, and I hope somebody will be interested in watching it. And so far, that's been the case.
And what's been the response from Professor Bergineau and others who have seen the film now?
So, you know, of course, many people ask me that, and I summarize my response by saying at the end of the film, after it's finished, I have four kids. At the time they went to college, I was living on the East Coast, so they went to elite private universities in the East Coast. And I say, boy, that's too bad. I wish I was living in California and I could have sent my four kids to Berkeley, because this is an extraordinary place to go to school.
And I'm ready to start a senior citizens program.
you want to enroll.
I want to enroll, absolutely.
Well, you see, you know, and it's beautiful. Some of the shots are beautiful. I mean, cinematography, you see how bucolic and color full of campuses. You see kids out there on the lawn playing Frisbee and, you know, doing all sorts of things, recreation activity. You get a lot of the view of entertainment that goes on at the university. I mean, it's really extraordinary. I mean, Cal graduates, Cal students, Cal alumni, and Cal staff, I think, will be very proud of this film. I mean, that's my response. Let's actually hear a classroom cut. That was one I was thinking we'd go to first. But this is seen early in the film in one of the university's classrooms. And the course is focusing on the study of poverty. In this clip, an African-American student challenges her classmates.
So what I find so interesting is that if this is the generation that cares about poverty, so you only care about it because it's affecting your communities. No one cared about it when it was affecting other people's communities. So now that your parents are losing their jobs and your parents' homes are foreclosing, which now affects your status in a school, why should I, a person of color, suddenly jump on that bandwagon and support your passion about poverty when poverty has existed? There have been lower socioeconomic areas where people didn't have books all along. The fact that you people are just figuring that out either saddens me or frightens me, or I'm not really sure what to make of it.
Fred Wiseman, what struck you about this discussion, the student?
Well, I mean, what struck me was that, I mean, I think it's a perfectly valid point, but it's limited because it's too. She makes it too vast a generalization, because there are plenty of middle class or upper class people that have been concerned about poverty and try to do something about it, and there are government programs that have tried to do something about it. I think her accusation is too blanket, but it's provocative, and it pushes the other students to answer. And so the discussion is very interesting, and I used it in the film because I wanted the film to raise, without in any way trying to resolve, those kinds of issues.
Now, how did you decide what – I mean, you took a lot of footage in classrooms. We've got all sorts of scientific teaching, humanities teaching. You know, we get a broad swath, in other words, of many disciplines and many extraordinary teachers. I mean, some of them will be recognizable immediately. Some of them maybe not so, a little more obscure than some of the star figures. But how do you select?
Well, I basically follow my instinct and have learned to trust my judgment. Whether it's good or not, it's not for me to say. But when I start off with 250 hours of rushes, what's involved is trying to think my way through the experience, and the rushes are my notes about the experience. So I have to figure out I have to determine which sequences I'm interested in, and then how I'm going to use them, how I'm going to pare them down, and how I'm going to relate them to the other sequences that I choose. And all that has absolutely nothing to do with filmmaking. It has to do with evaluating what's going on in each sequence and what its potential relationship to other sequences might be.
You said you do the film for you. Are you not concerned about the audience?
Well, I don't know how to think about the audience. How do I know when I make a film that it's going to be shown 6 months later in Paris or in Chicago, and who the people are and what their experience is and what their values are, what their educational level might be, or what their income level might be, what their interests are.
Now, Rorschach, I've said, you know, in many ways. I mean, somebody said, I think one reviewer said Chancellor Bergeron is the hero of the film. Somebody else said Bergeron comes off as arrogant or cocky or whatever. You know, and the sense is good in that. But there are probably a lot of people who will say, oh, this is Berkeley, and so it's skewed left.
Because that's a cliche. The film is anti-cliche, or at least I hope it is. But I think if you start thinking about the audience, then it's ultimately condescending, because the only place you can arrive at is to figure out your fantasy about the lowest common denominator. And that's insulting to the audience, whoever they may be.
Well, I think people will come away with all kinds of different responses in seeing this movie.
But I hope they think about the questions that the film tries to raise.
But we were talking a little bit before we went on air about a scene with some veterans, which is really very poignant, veterans who come back and are going back into the university education. And Robert Bergeron, it's something that a lot of these reviewers just haven't picked up on. It's one of the more poignant parts of the film.
Yes, and so we work very hard at Berkeley to accommodate all kinds of communities. We have a program for which actually a couple of staff, my wife and I, started for students who are products of the foster care system, who have a set of needs which are entirely different from the rest of our student body. And we have an administrator who specializes in that. Similarly, when we started
getting... Can I just say something? Because I just happened to read the New Harpers. I just had to get this in because it was startling and yet not startling that over the age of 26, all of those who have been in foster care, one-third of them are homeless.
Yes. Correct.
That's a pretty startling statistic.
Right, right.
I'm sorry.
So no, I think that's relevant, and that's one of the reasons that we started this. And we could have a whole program on the effects of foster care, because we one of the things we started doing is having dinners for the foster care kids at the chancellor's residence, and so we got to know them extremely well. It was a very uplifting life experience. But coming back to the veterans, and so then. We also realized a number of years ago that there was a group of people turning up on campus who had gone through really difficult experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that this group needed support just like the former foster kids did. And so we assigned one of our very skilled support people to then form a group to support veterans of Afghanistan and Iraq. And Fred captured that beautifully in the film, and I think that's, from my point of view, the single best scene in the movie. But there are many that I'm very fond of.
There's a lot of pretty extraordinary scenes in here, and I think. By the way, just out of my own curiosity, Fred, you got marching bands, you got kids playing frisbee on the lawn, skateboards, all kind. No commencement.
No, I was there in the fall. No, but I mean, there are probably 40,000 things that aren't in the film. That's why I called it At Berkeley, because I didn't want to in any way suggest that the film covered everything, because it never could.
Well, it's also, I think, a film that ranges around and has a lot of just the spectacle of being a university student or being in a classroom, being observing research and so forth. Robert Bergeron said the thing that he was most moved by was the veterans. What were you most moved by?
I think I was most moved. I was certainly moved by the sequence with the veterans, but I was certainly moved also by the middle-class girl who starts to cry when she thinks of the pressure on her parents because she's not eligible for any scholarships, and the pressure that creates for her parents to find ways of keeping her in college.
That was the one that got to me, too. And this, I think we have a clip of this, yeah? And this is this young woman talking about the financial burden her parents face as a middle-class family.
I'm solidly middle-class, and it sucks because with the economy the way it is, my mom's a teacher, so in her district, she gets paid less now than she used to, and costs for tuition and room and board and everything has increased. So I feel kind of the obligation to work more to compensate for that. Mm. And it's just really frustrating because I don't qualify for anything besides like unsubsidized loans. And I just feel horrible, you know, like making my parents go through that. And it really sucks.
I understand that perspective too, and we encourage students who are in that circumstance to, and we understand how it might be compelling to try to work more, but we encourage students not to work so much that then their grades become impacted, or that you'll need to take more time, which would then be more of a financial burden for the student or for the families.
Yeah, Fred Reisman and Robert Bergeron, underlying the whole film is the financial crisis and the cutbacks and the difficulty for students, for professors, for researchers, for really the whole university, and the heroic efforts to try to find compensatory ways to essentially deal with that. So there is a strong message here. Then the message is an important one.
Couldn't agree more. And in fact, sort of as an accident of the timing, Fred caught us in the middle of that. We, under the leadership of the then Vice Chancellor for Business Affairs, Frank Yeary, and the rest of us, we were working very hard to figure out a financial strategy that would enable us to maintain not just our excellence, but also our public character, and specifically access to the California population as a whole. One of the ironies of the segment you just gave of that young woman from middle-class family was that at exactly that time, Frank Yeary, Harry LeGrand, the Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, and I were working hard to try and devise an affordable model that would enable us to offer financial aid to middle-class families. And indeed, we turned out to be successful at that, so that now for people whose family income is under $140,000, between 80 and 140, we defined as middle class, that their tuition is subsidized. And furthermore, we set up a protocol so that they never have to pay tuition increases. So if the tuition goes up, middle class families will not have to pay the tuition increase the university will cover.
Well, and Janet Napolitano has made it likely that at least for a temporary amount of time, there won't be any tuition increases.
Well, that's actually a bad thing for students, frankly. So I'm sort of disappointed that that has happened.
Yeah, why?
Because it's bad student. It's bad for students, and it's bad for low-income workers. For students who are really low-income, an important part of their financial aid package comes from having a one-third set-aside of the tuition. And remember, I said at Berkeley, it's only if your family income is over $140,000 that you pay a tuition increase. We take one-third of that tuition increase and give it to low-income students to help with their cost of living. So if the tuition doesn't go up, then those increased resources to help low-income students pay their bills are not there. The second thing is that the state investment is now so low that the state no longer pays the salaries of any workers. No staff member is paid by the state. And so if the tuition is, and so the salaries of our low-income workers, our workers generally, are paid largely by student tuition. And of course, naturally, our staff deserve, they deserve salary increases. And so if the tuition is held fixed, then there's no new resources to pay for the salary increases that our staff deserve. So we have a catch-22 situation, which almost no one understands.
Well, you've made it quite lucid from your perspective. Also, $140,000 as an income being inadequate to pay for a college education is in many people's minds, nothing short of astonishing. But the timing of this film, again, Fred Wiseman, protests are going on, and actually we've even got protests against John Woo into the picture. But I was struck by what I felt was your respect. It came across for the people who are making decisions. They're working with the Berkeley police. They're trying to decide how to deal with protests and so forth. And I think even you're on the record as saying these people were a lot more honorable and thoughtful than maybe you've anticipated. People in the
high positions. Well, it's not a question that I anticipated something differently. I didn't know because I had never had the opportunity to be with them and participate in their work. And so that I was very pleased to find a group of people who cared about what they were doing, were working with great intelligence and sensitivity to maintain the university. It sort of plays into something else that has nothing to do with Berkeley, but response to some of my films, because some people think that the real subject of my movies is the exploitation of poor people by the state. And I think my movies are much more complicated than that. So some people are going to be disappointed because I show a group of able people maintaining the university. And I think that shows a complete lack of understanding both of the university and of what I'm trying to do.
Our guest, Fred Wiseman, and our guest, Robert Bourgeoneau, and you can be our guest as well. In fact, the new movie we're talking about is At Berkeley, all about one of the nation's top schools struggling to fulfill its public mission, and we welcome your involvement in this program. If you want to talk with Fred Wiseman, one of the great documentary filmmakers, one of the greatest, really, or Robert Bourgeoneau, now a physics professor, but former chancellor of Berkeley, talk about Berkeley, and let's hear from you. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about a new film, At Berkeley, really about one of the nation's finest schools struggling to fulfill their public mission and struggling in certainly harder times. And I would also throw the question out to you, our listeners, and this doesn't have to be Cal Berkeley graduates or students who are presently attending Cal Berkeley, but what do you really remember and maybe even cherish most about a university education? It's an important question to me as a professor of law these many years. And when you think about, for example, what you most benefited by in terms of your undergraduate education, because this is a film which covers such a broad swath. It's not only what goes on in terms of research, changing people's lives, but also what goes on in the classroom, what goes on from the administrative side, what goes on simply in the day-to-day quotidian living life on the Berkeley campus, and being some students lying there on the lawn looking at their iPhones or reading a book while others are out there protesting. I mean, you know, it really gives you a pretty broad and extensive sense. In fact, Taylor writes here, as a recent graduate from UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism's documentary program, I cannot wait to see at Berkeley from a filmmaker we so exuberantly studied. Was it a difficult choice to choose the University of California over other prominent public institutions, and was access ever an issue? Well, we've kind of covered those points. There wasn't much of a choice because the other universities weren't as open as Berkeley.
Well, I didn't try any other university either.
But at this point, it seems pretty reasonable to assume that you would
yes,
not have.
In fact, I
think Harvard said no way would they have.
Well, I inquired. I didn't inquire directly at Harvard. I inquired indirectly through some friends of mine, and they said, forget it.
But access was not an issue for you.
No.
At all, really.
Not at all.
No.
I actually did a recent meeting, did a poll of my of fellow university leaders, and it was unanimous. Like, you were crazy to take this chance.
Well, again, we're talking with documentary filmmaker Frederick Wiseman. At Berkeley is his 38th documentary and focuses on the institution, and he has won numerous film awards, Guggenheim, MacArthur Fellowships, as well as the George Polk Career Award. The film opens in the Bay Area this Friday, December 6th, at the Roxy, San Francisco, Elmwood Theater in Berkeley, and Sebastopol Cinemas. In Sonoma, and it can also be seen on PBS on January 13th, that's 2014, on the Independent Lens series. And you can visit at berkeley.edu for more information on upcoming screenings. Robert Bergeneau is also with us, former chancellor of UC Berkeley, currently professor of physics at UC Berkeley. And again, we welcome your involvement in the program. And again, I'd ask the question about, not necessarily only to Cal graduates, but what's the thing you cherish most about a university education, particularly if you had a public university education? And our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, our email address, forum@kqed.org, our website, kqed.org/forum, and you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Marga, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited with your guests and program today. Quick question. I was in the audiovisual department at Yale in the 60s when your guest, Professor Wiseman, was, you know, close to God with us for his wonderful documentaries. And so I wanted to know, how has the tremendous changes in the technology, moving from film and baskets, which we edited, to digital and so forth, has it changed the way you can tell a story or what stories you can tell?
As far as I'm concerned, it hasn't changed anything, except that I don't like editing digitally, and I wish I could continue to work on film. But that may be because I worked on edited film for 40 years. But I still think the film looks better, although the digital cameras are fast catching up.
Thank you for that question, Margo. I want to bring another caller on right away. Catherine, that's you, and I think this will go to former Chancellor Bergeneau. Go ahead, Catherine.
Well, yes, to the Chancellor, but also to the filmmakers. I'm curious if the film addresses the drastic change in administration over the years from the traditional academic leadership of the university to a more of a corporate style. I'm wondering if the film touches on that.
So I suppose it does indirectly. First of all, I think your characterization is not correct. Actually, I'm a career academic, and during my entire time as chancellor, I continued to publish articles in on basic fundamental physics along with students, and I had undergraduates in my lab and graduate students, et cetera. So similarly for the provost, so the leadership of the university were simultaneously active academics as well as being administrators. But what we did do is, for the business parts of the university, bring in people who had genuine business skills, because that was absolutely necessary if we were going to help maintain Berkeley's excellence and its public character, specifically access to people from all economic strata in California.
Did you see corporate takeover in this film, or did that come into your vision at all, Fred Weisberg?
Well, no. I mean, I'm not sure that I'm in any way qualified to know what corporate takeover means. Some people characterize the effort to reorganize the administration as corporatizing it. It just seemed to me a sensible approach as a way of trying to save money and get things done faster and more efficiently.
There's also a moment in the film where, Tessa Bergeron, I think you're involved in this footage. You're talking about really, I'll put it crudely, the cash cow of international students and students from out of state. In the sense of just putting more into the coffers, a necessity.
So when I first arrived at Berkeley, and you know, my past academic experience was at Yale, Oxford, MIT, and the University of Toronto, and I was struck when I arrived at Berkeley as chancellor with, especially in our undergraduate body, how few international students there were. And I felt that the California students were suffering by not being exposed to the broad geographical view of people from other countries and from other cultures. And so I felt that we, for the sake of our education, needed to increase significantly the number of out-of-state, but especially international students. And we had started down that road, and we were well on the way, not by replacing Californians, but by increasing the size of the student body. When the financial crisis came, then it turned out that the fact that by law in California, out-of-state and international students are required to pay as tuition the actual cost of their education, that it was also advantageous financially. But the initial motivation was entirely educational.
In fact, there's a kind of bit of a tip of the hat, I would say, from you as a filmmaker, Fred Wiseman, to the diversity of the Berkeley campus. That comes across.
Well, good. I mean, because certainly that's what one sees at Berkeley. No race is dominant. You see people from all the races, all the ethnicities, all the religions. And I think in many ways, Berkeley is the true face of America.
Let me bring more of our callers on, and we'll get the true face of our callers here. Mary, you're on. Hi.
Hi. I would like to, the thing I remember about Berkeley was that I could afford it. It was $250 a quarter, and my parents didn't want me to go to college. So for me, I could work through the summer and work part-time for books and things and go to college and go to a great college. People forget that even, you know, I'm in my mid-50s, that there were still people that didn't want women to go to school. And the fact that $30,000 or whatever it costs now makes it out of reach is very sad to me.
I think, Robert Bergeron, you share that sadness?
So, of course, this depends heavily on what your parents' family income was. If your family income is $80,000 or less, you wouldn't have to pay $250 a semester. You would pay zero. Not only that, the university would provide a significant amount of money to pay for your cost of living. So our low-income students are actually much better off than they were when you went to school. We also provide substantial financial aid to students from middle-class families with incomes up to $140,000. So compared to when you went to school, we have many, many more students from low-income families. And so we're very proud of the opportunity that we provide to all Californians, not just those from middle and upper middle-class backgrounds.
We go to some emails here. Gina writes, does Mr. Wiseman touch on how Berkeley has increased its administrative ranks by 30% in the last 20 years? Follow the money. Berkeley does not put education first.
Well, I don't know how to answer that question. It's not a question. It's a statement. On the basis of my limited experience, totally inaccurate.
Well, here's another question about did you want to answer that question?
Well, only
Professor
that
Bergeron?
We've
Or a statement.
It's true that the number of administrators increased, but that actually tracked the increase in research volume. And so these are mostly people who are paid for out of research funding. And we worked very hard to decrease the size of the administrative staff, and that's still ongoing.
Getting some more of these kind of tough money questions, here's David who writes, and I'm sure you've had this question fobbed at you before, Professor Bergeron. Was it a mistake to spend over $470 million on the Cal football stadium?
Of course, the financing of athletics is a challenge in which we could have an entire program of intercollegiate athletics. We're very proud of the fact that Berkeley athletes at the Summer Olympics won the same number of gold medals as France did and as Germany did. And so we have a tremendously exciting intercollegiate athletics program, but it's expensive. Now it's almost completely self-supporting. The stadium itself is self-supporting through philanthropy. So it's a financial challenge. We recognize that, but it's not coming out of either state funds or student tuition.
Another listener writes, my visits to Berkeley in the last few years are reduced to the campus. Within a beauty, a harmony, architectural tour de force, great gardens with vivid maple leaf colors, the redwood, the rolling hills amidst the most intellectual gray matter. But step beyond the majestic gates on a Telegraph Avenue and you're in a sea of marketing and ugliness. The campus is under siege, and I hope your film will ward off the attacking fleet of consumerism. But Robert Bergeron, let's talk a little bit about facing the toughness of Telegraph Avenue encroaching and, town and gown, really, and the two being separate as they are.
Yes. So, when I was at MIT, it was a challenge between the university and Cambridge. And so at Oxford in ancient times, the townies used to kill the university students. And so we're in much better shape than that. I had very good relations while I was chancellor with the mayor and was very fond of both him and his spouse, Lonnie Hancock. And so we worked hard to work with the city, but there's always challenges in town-gown relations in any university that I've ever been at.
You want to say something about this, Fred Wiseman?
Well, no, I didn't really have an opportunity to. I mean, I didn't learn anything about that.
But you learned about the talks between the city and Berkeley in terms of handling protests.
What I learned was that the university and the city were making an effort to talk to each other, to collaborate, to exchange. For example, there's a scene in the movie where there's discussion about how Berkeley police can work with the campus police, and the campus police can ride around in the Berkeley cars, and how they work jointly together to resolve what other issues come up.
And one of the programs I'm really proud of that I started during my administration was that it's now, I think, up to $250,000 a year we provide to projects which usually are collaborative between the university and townspeople that will, in one way or another, enhance life in the city of Berkeley. And this is really seed funding that runs for at most 2 years. And that program's been really successful, and it's been really exciting, the number of innovative proposals we get from the city of Berkeley.
So, Fred Wiseman, how confident are you about this institution and its endurance and its future?
Well, I mean, I don't think I'm pretentious enough to answer the question. I'll answer it. It seems to me that if the institution continues to attract the kinds of students it had when I made the film and maintains the high quality of the faculty, there's every reason to expect that the university will continue to exist and achieve its high goals for the future.
And what about American institutions per se, since you've
Well, that's too vast a subject. I mean, I'll pass on that one.
Right. Sam writes, I find it interesting that Chancellor Bergeron is so angry at budget cuts when Berkeley administration used police to physically attack campus protesters who were themselves voicing their rage. It seems that UCB administrators only wanted institutionalized dissent.
So during my time as chancellor, there were probably 100 protests altogether. And I think we handled the vast majority of them very well. And I feel very badly that there was violence in a couple of cases, including violence against the police. And actually, the most seriously injured person in any of the protests was a policeman who was out of work for 2.5 months.
As a listener writes, I'm glad to hear your guests are starting to help the lower-income students. When I was there, I was working almost full-time, taking a full class load, and still struggle sometimes not having bus fare, walking 3 miles back and forth, and not having decent meals for days. Because my grades fell a bit, I was no longer eligible for the grants I was receiving, and the school made me pay back those loans. Let's hear from some more listeners, and this is Kate up in Sonoma. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to comment on some experiences that were dear to me in my college career. I went to a small liberal arts school in Vermont, and I walked in knowing I wanted to be an environmental studies major, but not really knowing what that meant or what I would do with it after. And it was through a few relationships that I formed with dear professors that I was able to really explore the interdisciplinary quality of my major, and it was through their commitment to me as an individual that I was set on the career path that I have today. One of these professors hosted a class that was part based in academic study, but also had a community project component. And it was through him and through this class that I was introduced to a family that helped me put me on track for the career that I have. So I just wanted to say that I valued the relationships that I formed with professors and community members in my college career.
Oh, good of you to call in with that. I thank you very much, Kate. And, well, you know, you get a whole education from this film. I mean, you learn about hepatitis C and virus research. You learn about mutations and RNA molecules, about taxidermy, about people learning to walk with artificial limbs, all about insects, plus E. Cummings and John Donne and Thoreau. And, I mean, they're little snatches from different classrooms that really offer. In fact, I hear a cut from one of those classroom scenes that we get in the film. And this is from a cancer researcher and a professor who is offering some advice to her students.
And I say to the young people, always think outside the box. Don't listen to your professors. Don't listen to your textbooks. They are dead. They don't know what they're doing. They are very conventional. They do incremental. Anybody who wants to say something important gets shut down. And they should, because they should go and prove it.
That's the spirit not only of scientific research, but really of Berkeley in many ways right there, I think, emblazoned. Let me bring some more of your calls on here, and we go to Lee next. Lee, thanks for waiting. Join us on Forum.
Yes, thank you, Michael. It's disconcerting to me to hear the administrator say that the tuition and the ability to go to Berkeley is easier than it was in the 60s, or better, or more programs for the low income, and yet to hear a student who is choking up because she's concerned about the stress and the burden her parents are going to have to get her through the school. So what I'm hearing here is what's happening to the middle class throughout the entire country is it's getting squeezed out, and it's being challenged, and it's being burdened. And so what's really, really disconcerting to me is those of you who went to school in the 50s and 60s and 70s, when school was $250, $300, $400, that's not the same as paying $8,000 to $10,000 or $12,000. Not even in 1960s money was that the same. And we are creating a system that's unfair to the generation that's in the university system right now. And it's just a shame, shame, shame on all of you who are doing that. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Robert Bergeron.
Well, you know, as I discussed earlier, and you must have missed it, that in fact, UC Berkeley was the first public university in the United States to offer a substantial financial aid program to middle-class students for family incomes up to $140,000, so that the cost is limited to parental cost is limited to 15% of family income, and so that's been addressed very directly. Of course, we would like to be able to provide more financial aid, but in a situation where three or four decades ago, when the state provided 60% of the university's budget and now provides 11%, we're restricted in how much financial aid we can offer to middle-class people. But the financial aid system that's set up guarantees that no middle-class student will ever have to pay a tuition increase, and we're quite proud of that.
One of the questions that comes up is people have very strong opinions, but they have no knowledge of what's actually going on. I don't know how, you know, precisely how that can be fought, but it's extremely disconcerting to find these rabid ideological views of what's going on the basis of absolutely no facts and no experience.
Also somewhat of a tradition at Berkeley, not to sound cynical, but let me go to some more of your emails. Henry writes, how about the shamefully low graduation rate of UC athletes? We're getting a lot of throwing at you here.
Wow, this is. Yeah. I thought this was about the movie. So first of all, the graduation rate of UC athletes overall is not low. And recently, the Vice Chancellor Administration did a compilation of graduation rates across the entire 29 intercollegiate athletic sports, And for many sports, the graduation rate is 100%. The low graduation rate that's being referred to is specifically connected to the men's football team in a past era and to the men's basketball team in that same era. And frankly, it's embarrassing, and it must be corrected. But let's not paint all of our student athletes with that same brush.
Well, let me just read a statistic here. 4 in 10 black male athletes on average earn a degree from Cal within 6 years of starting school, compared with 7 in 10 white male athletes. That's according to NCAA, which released graduation rates students who entered college between 1998 and 2006.
So that's specifically referring to the football team, and those statistics are not that is just not acceptable.
You knew when you came in here. I mean, and people haven't seen the film yet. As having been chancellor, you get all kinds of stuff thrown at you. Here's actually Kristen who writes, and there's a lot in the film about the attempt to avoid layoffs and to save jobs, especially during the furlough times and all that. But Kristen on our Facebook page says, as a former staff member who was laid off due to operational excellence, quote unquote, I wonder how much the film delved into the massive layoffs since 2008, which disproportionately hit the lower level staff, those earning under $80,000 per year, while saving the middle and upper level administrators who aren't on the front lines serving students and scholars.
So we're getting further and further away from the film. So in fact, the first set of first of all, there's a limited number of layoffs out of our staff, which comes close to 15,000. The number of people laid off was in 100 and some, and those were mostly middle managers. And so we specifically tried to reduce the number of layers of management, which meant that when there were layoffs, they were largely redundant people who were in the middle, not the lowest income people. We did during the first really drastic budget cut have to lay off some of our custodians, for example, because we just didn't have the money to pay their salaries. But in the end, we hired all of them back.
There's a funny line in the film where they talk about the one guy who mows all the lawns.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people were there before that?
There was more than one. So it's true that we had to let go of a number of custodians because people forget the state took away the money. And so there literally was not money to pay their salaries. But we did in due course manage to hire all of them back.
Caller Tanya from Santa Rosa joins us. Tanya, hi.
Hello, Michael. You were talking about support for foster care students and veterans, and I'm wondering if you have support for disabled students. I kind of have a unique case as I have an illness that consists of bouts and remissions, and I'd like to go to Berkeley and major in architecture, but it's been very challenging for me due to having to take off time due to my illness.
Yeah. So I can't, unfortunately, I can't speak about specific situations, but we do work very hard to accommodate disabled students. We put a large number of resources into it. We have a special program for disabled students.
I don't know if it was a student, but there's a scene in the film, which is really quite impressive, where they're working, as I think I alluded to, with allowing someone who is apparently paralyzed from the waist down to work with artificial limbs and move forward. It's an exoskeleton.
Yes, right.
Let me thank the caller and go right to another caller. Lisa, hi.
Yes, I grew up in the California desert, and I was the first in my family to go to college. I got into Berkeley because high school teachers suggested and helped me. I was, pretty lower middle income kid. I got a Cal Grant. I studied comparative literature. I worked very hard to get out in 4 years. And I also worked as an au pair and a house cleaner, which is something the university used to help students find housing in the very expensive Oakland-Berkeley area. I graduated in 87, and I believe that the university did a good job then to help students who were willing to work hard. I didn't have a great social life. I went to school and I went to work. But I got a Cal degree and it changed my life. And it changed the life of a lot of people around me. And so I think that some of the criticism that's been leveled at the university is not fair. state of California voters over the last 30 years have been reluctant to pay for the cost of running the university. So, you know, some middle-class voters whose kids are trying to get through school would have been helped if they had made different decisions at the voter block. So I just feel, you know, thank you very much to Professor Bergeron for really, I think, defending what I believe as a lifelong Californian is the fact that the university has continued to be a place that's welcomed poor kids, middle-class kids from all parts of California. You know, it's hard to come from the desert to the Bay Area.
Well, thank you, Lisa. Good to hear from you this morning. Appreciate your call. And a little time left here. I wish maybe, since we've gone into so much of the nuances of the university, we could talk about what the future looks like from your perspective, Robert Bergeron, especially with all these online courses. But I think you're both pretty sanguine, I get the sense. And what's the next project for you, Fred Wiseman?
I'm just finishing up a movie about the National Gallery in London, which is one of the great art museums of the world.
And what drew you there?
Sorry?
What drew you to the National Gallery?
Well, I wanted to make a movie about a museum, and the National Gallery has a terrific collection. And once again, I requested permission and got it.
Well, At Berkeley opens in the Bay Area this Friday, December 6th, at the Roxy in San Francisco, Elmwood Theater in Berkeley, and Sebastopol Cinemas in Sonoma. It can be seen on PBS January 13th on the Independent Lens series. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks to all the callers. They were really interesting questions.
Fred Wiseman, Robert Bergeron, and we remind you that we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Mark. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.